etc. But you will recall that we're not meeting on Friday. Some members were encouraging us to meet on Thursday afternoon, but as I already said, there was a position already taken with caucuses and one thing and another that that day should remain somewhat sacrosanct. So Friday, we thought it advisable to encourage you to do constituency or put your feet up with the family until next week. Right. So, that is, and I just hope that you will communicate, but that I'm not sure how you're going to if your phone is gone. Members, will you all just look on the right? Look under these desks and so on. Because we can't lose that maroon. The thing is, it's not black. It's maroon. It's a blackberry. And the committee secretary had was actually SMSing people just before lunch. Never left here. But somehow the phone left. So, I don't know. I would imagine it, it's a bit too distinctive to have been picked up, so perhaps it's just lying under something. Okay, so it's an earnest appeal because you know how difficult it will be for us to then contact the secretary. Yes, that's one of the hazards. Well, look, what I should make clear to you is that what we have here is the standing committee, or the standing advisory committee on intellectual property, with Professor Duplessis here, who's the deputy chairperson of SACP, and Mr. Alan Jefter, member of the SACP. Now, I understand that the deputy chairperson, Professor Duplessis, will be leading the delegation. Or, you know, when I say that, we do have to refer to one person so that the other then engages as well. So what we'll do then is, I think you've listened to so many of these inputs and presentations, but yours again is of a slightly different nature. Am I correct? So my suggestion to you and proposal is, or rather request, would be just to explain who you are, as it were, you know, to members of the committee and anyone else who is present here. And where was that found? I wonder where it was found. Main thing is that it has been recovered, which is a lot more than can be said for certain intellectual property rights. Without even an expenditure of financial resources for that matter, but merely an application of our minds. So amazing what the application of the mind can achieve. But let us move on. I think we're all wide awake, ready to finish early. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much for this opportunity. Honourable members of this committee, they call this the graveyard session. And I think it is. Honourable Chair, it is not because I think they will be dead by the end of the session. I think they will be wishing they were dead by the end of the session, because we are going to respond to each and every allegation having been made over the past 2 days, and we are going to quote authority for everything. My colleague, Alan Jefter, and I serve on the advisory committee to the Minister of Trade and Industry. And I'm reluctant to admit that this committee is established in terms of Section 40 of the Copyright Act. So we are under attack in any case, because we are under the Copyright Act. But on a serious note now, The committee has been very, very involved over the past 2, 3, 4 years, excuse me, with the draft legislation, and you'll see now what I'm referring to. Please permit me a preliminary remark. This committee has been grappling...
I'm so sorry to do this, but we want to hear you. Now, I don't know if your chair couldn't come a little closer. thank you.
Is this better? Can you hear me better now? Better. Okay. Thank you, Honourable Chair. This committee has been grappling with this complex bit of legislation for some time now. And both my colleague, Mr. Alan Yefta, and I have been following the process very carefully. We've read the workshop reports. We are aware of all the problems that have been identified by the different stakeholders, the questions that have been asked, the criticism that has been expressed, the issues that have been raised. And at this stage, I'm not sure whether I should commiserate with this committee for the suffering that they had to endure, or whether I should congratulate them on their perseverance. But what I want to say, Honourable Chair, is that this will not have been a wasted effort. Whatever comes out of this legislative attempt will be a very important step in the legislative history of this country, because we are one of the first countries addressing from a legal perspective the need to protect traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge, as it can be called from time to time. And I just also want to acknowledge the members of the Department of Trade and Industry. They are all members of the Advisory Committee, ex officio, and we have all walked this road together. I just sincerely hope that the newspaper reports that appeared this morning, to the effect that this committee has already rejected the intellectual property bill on the table, is not quite correct. There was a newspaper report this morning seeming to indicate that there is already a sense of rejection of the intellectual property bill, but I think that is probably not correct. Yeah. Now, I have been asked to identify myself, and I will do that. And then my colleague, Mr. Alan Yefta, will identify himself, and you'll know exactly who you're dealing with. Honourable Chair, I have served on this advisory committee of the Minister of Trade and Industry since about 1986. I was first appointed by the then Deputy Minister, who was Mr. Siu Alat. It was the previous government. I was reappointed in 1995 by Minister Trevor Manuel and reappointed at the end of 1999 by Minister Alec Irwin, and I'm still in office. Mr. Alan Yefta has served for at least the last 10 years, but he'll tell you about that. So the point is that I have come a long way as part of the advisory committee dealing with the drafting and the assessment of intellectual property laws, regulations, systems. In 1997, I was part of the team that drafted the 1997 Comprehensive Intellectual Property Law Amendment Bill to ensure that the country's intellectual property laws were properly compliant with the TRIPS Agreement. And I think at this point in time, we can say with a measure of confidence that South Africa is seen as a country which is substantially TRIPS compliant. I have an apology from the chairman of our advisory committee, Judge Ian Farlam, who has just retired as a judge of the Supreme Court of Appeal. He is acting in Lesotho and he couldn't attend the session today, but he is fully aware of the position that Alan and myself will be putting forward, and he supports that. Professionally, I joined the firm of Adams & Adams, which is a law firm specializing in intellectual property law. The firm was founded in 1908 We had our centenary in 2008. It is the biggest law firm specializing in intellectual property, with the exception probably of my colleague who probably contest that. But I joined the firm in 1962 as a candidate attorney with a law degree and a science degree. Now, I think many people may have been in primary school then, or some may not even have been born. But ever since then, I have been involved in the area of intellectual property law. I have retired as a partner of the firm. We have an age-related retirement date, but fortunately they appointed me as a full-time consultant. They actually call me a senior consultant, and it's because of my grey hair. Not quite. A couple of years still to go, Honourable Chair, before you reach that stage. I served as the chairperson of the Patent Examination Board for many years. I was the president of the Law Society of the Northern Provinces. I was the first co-chair of the Law Society of South Africa. But that is all in the past. Now I'm just doing the work that really interests me, and that is dealing with intellectual property laws and the development of our laws. I also have an apology from the chairperson of our firm, Mr. Dario Tanziani, who fully supports, and the firm fully supports, the position that I will put to you and that Alan Yefter will also support. Now, personally, I have had extensive international exposure. I have lectured for WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization. I've lectured in China, in India, in Egypt, in many African countries to create an awareness and also to educate people about the intricacies of intellectual property legislation. I deal very regularly with the World Trade Organization. In fact, when South Africa first signed the bundle of agreements in 1994, I appeared on behalf of the Department of Trade and Industry before the TRIPS Council in Geneva to justify the intellectual property laws of our country and to answer the questions put to us by many other countries on allegations that we were not entirely TRIPS compliant. I think at the end of the day, our legislative system persuaded people that we were, in fact, in compliance with TRIPS. I still have regular contact with the World Trade Organization. We provide information through a committee that I serve on developments in relation to intellectual property, and the TRIPS Secretariat takes note of that, and it is usually integrated into the work that they've done. In fact, I met with the two representatives of the TRIPS Secretariat about 2 weeks ago in Paris. I want to say, before I give the microphone to my colleague, Mr. Alan Yefter, that yes, the 50-year period, which is referred to in the Copyright Act as the cut-off point for the protection to be extended to traditional works, will be reconsidered. It is an arbitrary cut-off date. It can be reconsidered, and it will be reconsidered. The team from the Department of Trade and Industry will sit around a table, and we will come up with a proposal on how that particular issue, which came up in about every presentation made to this committee, was raised. And I know Honourable Mr. Harris is very aware of that, and I want to say before I do anything else, that will be looked at very carefully. I hand over now to my colleague, Mr. Alan Yefter.
Thank you. I've been an intellectual property law practitioner since 1982. In 1995, I was appointed by Minister Alec Irwin as a member of the SACIP, and in the same manner like my colleague, since my appointment in 1995, I've been reappointed by Minister Alec Irwin, and I've served an ongoing stint until the present date. In terms of the functioning of the SACIP, we work very closely with CIPRO and the DTI officials engaged in in IP. I'm presently a director of the law firm Cliff Dekker Hofmeyer Incorporated, also focusing on IP. I've also, over the past few years, worked extensively on the innovation and commercialization of IP, and which seeks really to develop and help, especially entrepreneurs and SMMEs in the commercialization of the IP. Within the SACIP, we also have subcommittees. I have served on the subcommittee as chairman of the copyright and trademark subcommittees, and I also have worked on the innovation subcommittee. In like manner as my colleague, I was involved in the drafting of the ensuring that the intellectual property was complied with TRIPS. There were also certain other legislation that we had worked on, amongst others, the Counterfeit Goods Act. In terms of experience, this formed part of my practice, and I've built up whether through advising local companies and offshore companies. I have worked for quite a while, since 1982, in this area. More recently, I've started conducting research within the area of natural resources, and specifically focusing on, amongst others, IKF and TKF within the sphere of the National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act, where there are provisions that provide for access sharing and for access and benefit sharing. I think just to summarize, we on the SACIP, a number of us have worked for very, very many years in that unit. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, so it's very difficult to say whether we are experts. I'm hesitant to say that, but I think I can say that both my colleague and I have experience in this field, and we are happy to share our experience with this Honourable Committee. The committee will be aware that a bundle of documents has been submitted by the Standing Advisory Committee and also jointly by the firms that we practice for, and on my own personal behalf. It's the 6 stack of paper. There are copies at the back there. It was submitted electronically in May 2010. You've got that. And the most important document within that bundle is, in fact, what is referred to as the revised IP Laws Amendment draft. There is a draft. It is towards the back of the bundle, but it is a fully revised version of a bill to put the bill which has been published in the Government Gazette and which is the subject of all the criticism that we heard over time, to put a proposal forward on how that bill can be rearranged, restructured, to take care of all of the problems that have been pointed out. So I think, with the permission of the team from the DTI, I would request the members of this committee to look at that document. It is part of the bundle. It is entitled, I must find it. Unfortunately, they are not consecutively numbered, but it is entitled Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill, and then there's a blank page, but it is formatted in exactly the right format for a bill to be submitted to Parliament. And please, committee members, take into account the redrafted version which has served before the Advisory Committee and in which many of the problems have been addressed. This bill, in fact, then shows that the Department of Trade and Industry has taken note of all of the submissions made since the first publication of the draft bill in 2006 or 2007. And that the Advisory Committee has looked at all of these submissions, and that steps have been taken to integrate all the proposals with merit and all the points of criticism into the revised version. So it is not quite correct, as some of our previous presenters have said, that the Department of Trade and Industry did nothing to take into account what was put before them. It was, in fact, taken into account. I also want to say that, of course, this is still a draft document, Honourable Chair, and whatever suggestions, proposals, recommendations will come out of this committee will have to be worked into that document. But at least there is a starting point that one can use to integrate the proposals that come from this committee. And also please remember that in order to implement the legislative changes, there will have to be regulations. The regulations can only be addressed once the format and the wording and the content of the bill itself have been settled and finalized. Then the team will get to work again and start drafting regulations. Now, my submission and that of my colleague, Mr. Alan Yefter, will be totally opposite to what has been presented here over the past 2 days. We are, in fact, in support of the policy position that traditional knowledge should be integrated in order to obtain effective protection into the existing intellectual property framework. We support the principle, as endorsed by Cabinet, that amendment of the existing intellectual property statutes is the correct way to go in order to ensure that effective protection is given to something which is regarded not only as of spiritual and emotional value to this country, but something which has inherent economic value. Traditional knowledge is intellectual property, and as intellectual property, it has economic value. It can be commercialized. It can be exploited to the benefit of those who have an interest in that particular item of traditional knowledge. The bill as published has shortcomings. I mean, we've heard that, we know that, we're aware of that. But we believe the shortcomings can be addressed, and we believe that there are sound reasons for using the intellectual property system to provide protection for traditional knowledge rather than creating a sui generis piece of legislation. And I will come back to this because it was an issue that was raised over and over again. Give us a sui generis piece of legislation. A sui generis piece of legislation, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of this committee, will mean that traditional knowledge is placed outside the framework of commercializable intellectual property. It means that we will, in a way, marginalize traditional knowledge. We will take it out of the existing international framework that is there to deal with issues pertaining to intellectual property. We believe, as a committee, and I as a person, that we should rather draw traditional knowledge into the framework which exists nationally as well as internationally to give recognition to the creations of the human mind. Because that is what intellectual property is. It is the outcome of the creative activity of the human mind. I cannot see how anybody can say that traditional knowledge is not the outcome of the creative activity of the human mind. And if that is the encompassing description of intellectual property, then I say it applies to traditional knowledge too. I agree, and I'm going to give the mic to you soon. I agree, Honourable Chair, that it will probably be necessary to set up this task team of experts, specialists, to look at the final draft of the bill. And I have no problem with that concept. But my call on the Honourable Committee is to give serious consideration to the proposal before the committee that intellectual property protection should be given to traditional knowledge, to the different manifestations of traditional knowledge. Not all can be covered, but this is a first step in a certain direction. Over to my colleague.
Thank you. I just want to add to the last point, and that is in terms of the National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act, it makes provision for indigenous knowledge and for protection thereof, in the sense that it crosses the protection in terms of the Patents Act, where any use of indigenous knowledge in a patent must be disclosed. In terms of the Biodiversity Act, there's provision whereby if any indigenous knowledge is used, then there must be access given and there must be benefit sharing with the community. So to that extent, we already have within the Biodiversity Act there's protection for IKS, and that is supported in turn by the Patents Act insofar as any patents are filed for that knowledge. Now, there's a philosophical issue, and that is really relates to one of developed countries up against developing countries. And if you look at natural resources, a lot of those issues are being tabled today in terms of climate change. Our intellectual property laws development from where it came initially would have developed out of the developed countries. Whereas what we have at the moment is where we sit in South Africa, where we are a developing country, we have indigenous knowledge systems that we need to protect. And if you look within the whole framework within countries such as China, in South America, their use of indigenous knowledge, whether for pharmaceuticals or for traditional health, is very, very extensive. And the other country or continent also where IKS is very extensively used is within Africa. Now, to the extent that we are a developing country, what we're saying is that we need to recognize that there is a lot of exploitation in the sense where you have developed countries looking at indigenous knowledge systems and looking to tap into that in order to exploit our biodiversity and specifically the knowledge within that. Now, by ensuring that we bring IKS within intellectual property, we then, as a developing country, do what we should do in terms of Africa, and that is to give recognition to the fact that it is intellectual property and that we should protect it within the existing system that we've created. Now, and I think it's for that reason that we are saying that if we look at how we have our constitution, we've got environmental management acts, a whole raft of legislation to protect natural resources. If you take indigenous knowledge systems, it derives from the resources that we have within the country, whether it be our plants, whether it be in terms of other resources that we have. And what we're really saying is that by bringing IKS within the ambit of our intellectual property legislation, we will then be able to provide for our people as a developed country. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, I want to endorse very strongly what Alan Yefta has said. You know, when the country in South Africa enacted the 2005 Patents Amendment Act, which is the one that my colleague referred to, and he and I were on the committee when that happened, there was an outcry because people said, what, you want to introduce a disclosure agreement into the Patents Act? Nobody has done that before. The Act was passed, the regulations were drafted, it was put into effect, and you know, the world didn't end. As a matter of fact, now, when the disclosure agreement in terms of the Convention on Biodiversity is discussed, South Africa is mentioned as the example country which had the courage to introduce the disclosure agreement when the other countries were still debating whether it should go into patent legislation. And yes, the Biodiversity Management Act in South Africa is working. There are difficulties with the bioprospecting regulations and the rules, but they will be sorted out as time goes on. I want to say something else, and that is the argument has been put to this committee that one should not distort or try and extend existing intellectual property laws to cover something which doesn't fit into the legal system. The reference was made to trying to fit a square peg into a round hole and so forth. But if you look back, Madam Chair, at the history of our intellectual property laws, as things developed, the laws were changed. Initially, the Copyright Act only covered songs, tunes, literary works, the words, stories, and artistic works, two or three-dimensional works. Then, suddenly, it was possible to make a sound recording. The Copyright Act was amended to make provision for sound recordings. Then it was possible to make a broadcast. The Copyright Act was amended to provide for broadcasts as copyright works. Then computer programs came along. The Copyright Act was amended to provide for the protection of computer programs as copyright works. Even program carrying signals to satellites are copyright works. Why cannot traditional songs, traditional folklore, traditional art, three-dimensional creative art as well as two-dimensional art, why cannot that also be slotted into the copyright system? There is no reason, I submit to this committee. The same happened with all of the other intellectual property laws. The Patents Act was extended to provide for microorganisms. A microorganism is a thing which is now patentable. Business methods are becoming patentable inventions. But at the moment, the bill will not deal with the Patents Act. That is something that will have to be addressed very specifically as a next step. But if you look at the Designs Act was similarly extended to provide for things which did not exist when the original Designs Act was formulated, such as integrated circuits. The little items that go into all the electronic equipment that we use, we now predict an integrated circuit as a design. Again, why cannot the Designs Act be amended with appropriate definitions to provide for traditional designs? All the beadwork that we have everywhere in the world as originating from South Africa, why cannot that be protected as well as other creative works. So the submission is, I do not believe we need sui generis legislation. I believe we need to look carefully at the bill, the redrafted version, preferably, and make sure that the way in which the existing intellectual property statutes are amended will cater for what is required, and that is to give adequate protection to traditional knowledge and specific manifestations of traditional knowledge. Certain aspects of traditional knowledge cannot go into intellectual property statutes. You know, burial sites, items of spiritual significance. That is something which will have to be protected in another way. But I also want to make it very clear that intellectual property laws will never try to replace customary laws and will never try to replace common law. Intellectual property legislation is in addition to existing systems of customary laws which can be relied upon to provide for ancillary protective measures for traditional items of culture and especially those with spiritual value. Intellectual property laws exist in parallel with the common law system, as we heard from one of the previous speakers, and it also exists in parallel with existing systems of customary law and traditional law. Alan, you must give a sign if you want to intervene. The reason why the Advisory Committee believes that intellectual property is the proper mechanism to use, is that there is the benefit of an existing regulatory legislative system, not only in South Africa, where we have a system of regulation and legislation, a system of administration, a system of registration, a system of enforcement of intellectual property rights, but also internationally, where there are instruments dealing with intellectual property. As yet, there is no international instrument, apart from the Convention on Biodiversity and the Bonn guidelines, which were issued in terms of that convention. There is no instrument dealing with traditional knowledge. The countries are still fighting. They are still fighting on how to formulate an instrument which will give international certainty to the protection of traditional knowledge. I think perhaps I'm an optimist or an idealist, but I think that what will come out of this legislative effort of South Africa may just provide the template, the framework, to other countries to come up with something to deal specifically with traditional knowledge. Because I can assure you, Honourable Chair, that at each and every international conference there is a debate about traditional knowledge and the need to protect and the question, how do we go about to protect this? Alan?
The point that I wanted to make is in respect of in terms of administration. We have the New Companies Act, and under the New Companies Act, the CIPRO and UKIP will be merged into the company structure. Under the existing CIPRO system, for example, provision is made for the registration of copyright in forms. You also have other legislation such as the Performance Protection Act. So in terms of doing the administration of traditional knowledge systems, our position is that when the New Companies Act comes into place and when the new structures are put into place, provision should be made for the administration systems that would go hand in hand with the recorder of traditional knowledge systems as and when they develop. So it is not an extra cost, certainly, but in the existing system, they are dealing with certain elements of copyright and intellectual property. And our position is certainly that when we bring traditional knowledge within the ambit of intellectual property legislation, the same administration system can then also apply.
Thank you, Alan. Absolutely correct. I want to please refer to something which has come up, especially from the Council of Traditional Leaders, and that had to do with the participation in decision-making. Now, the national framework that will be created to administer the intellectual property rights in regard to traditional knowledge, that is set out from page 22 of this redrafted bill version that I referred to in your big bundle of documents. If you look at page 22 of the redraft, there is provision specifically for the establishment of a national council. Now, this national council has been expanded, and there is very clear provision for the appointment of members in consultation with the ministers responsible for agriculture, for arts and culture, for cooperative governments and traditional affairs, environmental affairs, health and science and technology. Then there is specific provision for representation by organized local government, and then there is provision for the Association of Traditional Healers. That should be expanded by adding and the Council of Traditional Leaders, not only the traditional healers, but also the traditional leaders. Then the minister may consult with academia, the organized legal profession, organized commerce and industry, and any other minister or relevant body or institution. So the council has been rephrased in a very encompassing manner, and there is specific provision that the council shall be broadly representative of the different cultures of the Republic. and further specific provisions, which I can read out, at all times will have as members at least three persons with extensive knowledge in and patronage of Indigenous cultures and values of Indigenous communities. At least three persons with extensive knowledge in and patronage of traditional artistic, literary, musical, and performing arts. And, fortunately for Alan and me, at least two persons with extensive knowledge and expertise in intellectual property. So the intellectual property lawyers will also be there. Then please look for, further on, in that same redrafted version, apart from the duties of the council, there is reference to the national database. Please allow me, Honourable Chair, to say something.
It's on page 25, the national database.
Sorry, national database, page 25. The usefulness and function of and the justification of a database were raised frequently as issues around this intellectual property bill. I think what we need to take into account is that we must also, as a country, as a body of persons involved in developing the laws of our country, ensure that traditional and Indigenous knowledge will be recorded so that it will be recognized, that it will be preserved, and so that the unauthorized use by third parties will be able to be prevented. Now, a database is one way of creating a record of what we have by way of a wealth of traditional knowledge. As the previous speaker also stressed the importance of a database, but from an intellectual property perspective, I want to point out another very important function of a database. A database provides a record of knowledge which can be relied upon to prevent unauthorized persons of taking the traditional knowledge, rendering that into a commercial and commercially exploitable commodity and taking all the benefit, such as the neem tree, such as basmati rice, such as the hoodia plant. Once you have a database, your traditional knowledge becomes prior art, and nobody can hope to patent that same knowledge at a later time, because you have a base on which you can rely to show that that knowledge existed prior to that fraudulent patent application. That would have assisted the Mashakani group in their struggle with the pelargonium plot and the exploitation in Germany. That would also have assisted us, I think, in the battle about the rooibos tea mark. Alan, do you have something to add?
I think the other example is the rosy periwinkle in Madagascar that they found was a very good, it was anti-cancer fighting properties. And as a plant, the product, the plant has been to a large extent over-exploited in Madagascar, and many of the pharmaceutical companies have harvested and made very substantial income out of this. You know, so I think the point is we have our, these are resources of the country, and we must protect them and increase them in terms of their perception as intellectual property.
For that, I also want to move on to page 26 of the redrafted version, where there is now specific provision for the establishment of a national trust in addition to a national trust fund. So there will no longer be only a fund, there will also be a trust, and there is provision for how the trustees will be appointed and what the duties of the trustees will be. And Honourable Chair, I want to emphasise at this point that the redrafted version took into account the proposals that came from the NEDLAC consultation process. Now, I know that the consultation process through NEDLAC has been criticised by some, But all of the proposals that came from that consultation process have been worked into the redrafted version. So there is more definite provision for how money paid into the National Trust will be dealt with. There is specific provision for alternative dispute resolution mechanisms and for the appointment of a dispute resolution panel. That's on page 28 of the redrafted version. And then there are very specific provisions for the setting up of community-based bodies. That is to ensure that the indigenous communities will have an opportunity of becoming engaged in the, not only in the administration of the rights and in the furtherance of their rights, but also in the economic exploitation of the rights. The new Section 64 and Section 65 deal with community-based bodies and also with community-based trusts and trust funds. And those proposals based on what came out of NEDLAC. Madam Chair, so the database, although some people may find it an unnecessary feature of the system, I believe will have a very important practical function once it is established. I also just want to go on again to repeat that the Legal Resources Centre stressed the importance of customary law. The Intellectual Property Amendment Bill says nowhere, and it is not intended to replace or remove or disable or diminish at all the customary laws which are in existence. They will continue to function as they are. You know, Honourable Chair, that if one looks at the system of intellectual property protection, although the Patents Act is there, an inventor is not obliged to use the Patents Act to patent his product. He can decide to rely on some other form of protection, whether it is trade secret, as in the case of the Coca-Cola formula, or whether it is a passing off or unfair competition. The patent system is there to be used at the option of the owner, and that will always be an applicable principle. A trademark owner can also choose not to register his trademark. He can rely on unregistered trade names, passing off, unfair competition, but the trademark's system is there to be used if and when desired. And that will be exactly the same in the case of traditional knowledge. It is not a compulsory system. There may be situations where another system of protection will be more adequate, such as customary law. But at least the opportunity will be there for traditional knowledge to be recognized and protected, and that means enforced against unauthorized use by others through an existing legal system.
With specifically in respect of trademarks, typically you would go and do a search to determine whether the trademark is registered at the registry in South Africa. You would then also check the company's name to see whether there's a possible company that has a similar name in a similar business as your as the goods on which you want to use your trademark. And then sometimes also one would go and do a check to see whether there's a domain name registered. Now, if you have a database and if you then develop your IPR from there, it means that when you go and do your searches, you would also be able to cross-check against the database. And as that database is developed, it means that you would be able to verify to what extent your trademark is being used or is forms part of a TKS system. So the systems are in place. Certainly, if we develop a database, it would be another level against which you can check your trademark. And certainly, it would provide protection.
Very good point. Absolutely correct. That is exactly how the database will become functional. Honourable Chair, several of the previous speakers pointed out inadequacies in the definitions. Yes, I concede that the definitions will have to be looked at again. Already they have been redefined. In the redrafted version, I think the definitions are tighter, they are more clear, they are more certain. But even after having prepared the redrafted version, the advisory committee at its very recent meeting, I think it was in July, decided that it wants to rephrase Indigenous community. And in the subsequent submission, it's called Supplementary Memorandum, which was submitted in July 2010, the advisory committee, in fact, proposes a further definition of Indigenous community. It's on page 3 of the supplementary memorandum. So the point is, yes, there are inadequacies in the definitions, and yes, they will be looked at very, very carefully in the light of all of the comments that had been made. Certainly, the periods of protection will be looked at again, and the 50-year cut-off date will be reconsidered in its entirety. But I want to explain what the underlying rationalization is always in regard to intellectual property. It is this, that the IP system is a quid pro quo system. The creator of the innovative concept discloses it in a document somewhere, in an application or in a database, in return gets exclusive rights for a given period of time to prevent all others from using that particular creative concept so that the creator can get all the economic benefit that flows from that creative product. But after a given period of time, the principle is that the creative product falls within the public domain and then it becomes available to all who may wish to make use of that. And that principle, I believe, should be adhered to also in regard to the protection that will be provided for traditional works. That is something, perhaps, that this Honourable Committee should debate amongst themselves and perhaps give an indication of how they see that as a possibility. But I cannot visualize that anybody can have exclusive rights in regard to anything forever and ever and ever. At some stage, the community must get the benefit of that creative input. And I think that's a very good principle, but perhaps that's something that the committee members can consider. Aaron?
Under the different statutes, different periods would apply. I mean, if it was, for example, a trademark, TKS, for example, that trademark would continue because you would renew it on it every 10 years. Because trademarks run for 10 years and then you can renew for forever as long as you continue using the mark and you renew the trademark. With patents, of course, that would give you a monopoly for 20 years. And copyright and the designs would also be a limited period. But in respect of trademarks, that would be able to be continued. So to the extent that you've got particular geographic marks, for example, or rebus, those marks you would be able to renew on an ongoing basis.
Honourable Chair, two matters were raised by the committee, by members of the committee. The one had to do with the World Trade Organization and TRIPS. And I believe I want to confirm that TRIPS merely sets out minimum levels of protection. I think it was the Honourable Ms. September, who raised that. Absolutely correct. Only minimum levels of protection. A country is perfectly entitled, without contravening the TRIPS agreement, to give more extensive protection. But a country cannot give less protection than what is required in TRIPS. So I cannot see that there will be a contravention of TRIPS if traditional knowledge manifestations are included into our intellectual property laws. We may have one problem, though, and that is the national treatment principle, which has been referred to by several speakers, and that is that a country is obliged, in terms of the TRIPS Agreement, Article 3, and also the Berne Convention, and also the Paris Convention, to give the same treatment that it gives to its own nationals to the nationals of other countries, other member countries of a convention or the TRIPS agreement. Now, Honorable Chair, you will see that one of the documents which was in fact submitted by the advisory committee is a proposed section to be incorporated into the revised bill. It is based on Section 37 of the Copyright Act, and that is that the minister will have the express authority to extend the protection introduced by way of this amendment to other countries, but there will always be a requirement of reciprocal protection. And I can't find it now amongst my documents. Let me try my own big file. I'm going to give you a page. Honourable Chair, the problem was it was a separate submission. It is item 4 of the content pages. It is a single, it's a two-page document only. It's a separate document. It came with a bundle of documents. It was lodged in May this year as item 4 of the bundle of documents. And if you don't have it, you can have this one, which is in my file because I have copies. It is a proposed provision to be inserted into the bill, that is its title, to give effect to the national treatment principle, and it says application of act to countries to which it does not extend. And there is specific authority to the minister by way of notice in the Gazette, and incidentally that's exactly the way in which copyright protection is extended to other countries in terms of the Berne Convention, to extend the protection to any country specified in the notice. So, Madam Chair, that is the one thing where there was concern within the advisory committee, the national treatment principle, but we believe that this provision, if incorporated, will take care of that concern. Alan, do you have anything to say? Okay. I would also just like to refer to a question that was asked by one of the honourable members. And that was more or less as follows. If one had to compare the proposed protection to traditional knowledge by way of the intellectual property system with protection by way of a sui generis system, where would the best bargain be found? Where could we look for the best dispensation to this country by choosing one of these two routes? My own view is that to use the sui generis route will be to isolate traditional knowledge from existing systems, to create a piece of legislation about which there would be no existing way of approaching the protection, of enforcing the protection, of assessing the protection, and there would be no international instruments to fall back on. I think although such an act may be able to address traditional knowledge in an easier manner, one of the presenters this morning said, but communities do not want to look at 4 or 5 different statutes. They want one statute. It may resolve that. It may provide one piece of legislation, but it will fall very short on the other benefits that I believe will be achieved through using the intellectual property system, and that is having an international system of conventions, of arrangements, of negotiations, where the benefit of best practice, international best practice, can be gained. Sui generis legislation will sit on the sideline, and I believe for that reason it would not be the best bargain that we can provide for the protection of traditional knowledge.
As a matter of practice, what happens is when you meet with the community or with someone who needs advice on IP, then what you would normally do is you would identify what is the makeup of the IP, and you would then determine whether it fits under trademark or whether it fits under design or whether it fits under copyright. Now, what we're doing over here is we're amending specific IP legislation, and when in due course you are consulted by a community, you would then inquire as to what is the nature of the IP in that TKS system, and if it is a trademark issue, then you would deal with it on the basis of the Trademarks Act. And you would do the same if it was, for example, in respect of copyright. So clearly, as we said earlier, you have the example in terms of patents. You also have the Biodiversity Act, whereas on the ground at the moment, people are concluding a benefit-sharing agreement, and they're doing it on the basis where they identify exactly what is the nature. So if it is, in the end, that the TKS, for example, is a plant aspect that they can patent, that is what they do. So ultimately, what is happening at the moment in terms of the Biodiversity Act is that where they deal with TKS and the Act deals with bioprospecting, they then apply traditional IP law. If it is a patent issue, then they go and protect it. And this is what we are saying as a committee, is fit the TKS within the existing IP system, and you make the inquiry when you are consulted as to where, under what legislation it fits.
Honourable Chair, I think we are probably overloading this committee, but remember we have been working on this issue for the past 4, 5, 6 years, McDonald going back, I can't tell you how long. So we've been grappling with the issues, and we've had endless discussions, and the team will know exactly to what extent. So perhaps we are giving you so much that you would prefer us to stop. But I want to say a few more things. This morning, the issue of geographical indications was mentioned. And there was a very strong plea for better protection for GIs, for geographical indicators. Now, the trademark amendment bill, the bill that you have in front of you, takes the first little step to make it quite clear that geographical indications can be registered as trademarks under the heading of collective trademarks and the heading of certification trademarks. It is only the first step. And the two presenters made it very clear that a stronger, more encompassing system was required. We are very well aware of that. But we're also very well aware that at this moment in time, there is negotiation going on at the World Trade Organization. The DTI team is there right now, or they will be there in a week or two, because I have been consulted on certain issues relating to the protection of geographical indications. And it would be unwise for this country at this point in time to come up with a more comprehensive system of geographical indication registration. At the moment, the TRIPS agreement only has Article 22 requiring us to give recognition to geographical indications, and this is what the amendment now will achieve. And once the negotiations in terms of Article 23 and 24, that is either the multi-party registration system, the multilateral registration system, and the expansion of geographical indications from wine and spirits to other products. Once those negotiations have been concluded, we will be in a better position in this country to set up the more comprehensive protection system for GIs, and we have to do that. We have to. We are losing things which we have grown up with, things such as Biltong. I was surprised to see that Biltong was a registered trademark in Germany. What do they know about Biltong? But be that as it may, we need to come up with a more comprehensive protection system, and it will happen as soon as the negotiations have been concluded on the international level.
Yes. Thank you to both of you
And that would be, I'm just looking, I know it's kept on referring to the person concerned as Alan, but I think it's Jephthah, isn't it? Jephthah. Professor Duplessis and Mr. Alan Jephthah. Yes, am I correct? Thank you. Before the committee asks their question, I just want to get a clarification. Obviously, the bill we have before us was the one which was gazetted in 2008. Just want to be quite certain about that. And you are, of course, the Standing Advisory Committee on Intellectual Property to the Minister. I hope I'm correct there. So the question then is this. I've seen the draft bill now, which you are proposing, having heard a number of issues, of course not having heard the public hearings here and some of the issues that have come up. But I would assume, if I look at what you have before us, and we did get this probably a week or so ago, 10 days ago, this has been shared with the minister as his advisory committee. You see, I'm looking here, you are the advisory committee of the minister, not of parliament. So I just want to clarify that.
Chair, yes, the advisory committee keeps full minutes of all of its meetings, and the minutes would have all the supporting documentation as part of the minutes. And the minister has been very, very busy over the past couple of months. You'll see that this bill was submitted to you in May 2010. At the same time, through the Department of Trade and Industry, the New Companies Act was being dealt with, the consumer protection legislation was being dealt with. I think the intellectual property is probably the one that will come up now once the other two have been concluded.
You know why I seek that clarification? Notwithstanding, of course, how busy the minister is, I think we're all aware of that, all of us, is that protocol-wise and systems-wise and so on, one would have expected the minister, who as you're at the advisory committee there, to have had sight of it in some way, so that I suppose he could, if he is that busy travelling, could have referred this to another member in the department, the DDG, to give him a comment. So I say this purely to do with the protocols involved, not because the substance of what you're saying is what we may have an issue with at all. But again, you know, we've been reminded so much of process, procedure, and that kind of thing. So, because having done this, you see, any fresh bill that would be contemplated by the department, as it were, would have to go through a particular process, if I may put it that way. Now, the bill that we've been talking about, 2007, is here before Parliament, you see. It's right here. Now, I just want to clarify, even with my own, the committee secretary, but also possibly Honourable September, who had been a chair in the previous term, I do think that the minister probably is at liberty to withdraw a bill, if I understand that correctly. But I may be wrong, that's why I'm just looking at both of you. I certainly know that on the parliamentary side and the committee, one of Parliament's committees, We have the right to recommend, if you want to put it that way, that this bill is withdrawn, if I can put it that way. Now, I'm just, if you don't mind, I'm just clarifying this with the committee secretary, because I think it's an important point. September, yeah, but if you could just come up to the table.
Thank you.
or September?
Chair, not maybe directly to your question, but partly too. I was going to ask a question in this regard. I think it would be helpful if they could clarify to us, notwithstanding in which capacity you're giving it, but the intention of your submission. Because everything that has been submitted to us, whoever it is, the committee must consider what do we do with the submissions that people are making. And so I think that must be clarified. As we sit here now, I would understand that you are making a submission and the committee must consider it, and we must then say what do we do with the bill. But in the clarity that you provide, you also, because I hear you saying, you know, you're still busy. We're not sure if you're at your entail already. But the key point here for us is the bill is in Parliament, and the committee must decide whatever we want to do. It's in our domain. It's our call at the moment, notwithstanding whatever. It's our call at the moment, and we need to take an appropriate decision on what we need to do. So I think so the issue of withdrawing or not withdrawing is not, it can't be in the equation. We must look at the totality of the fact that we've had a two-day public hearings, and I mean, for example, the subcommittee probably should sit and mull over all of these things, and you know, sort of that direction. They have to clarify to us the intention of the content of what they have brought here to us, because you can't have a bill in Parliament and something else is carrying on there, and then what?
Thank you very much. I think, yes, let's just settle this procedural issue at the moment and systems. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, I understand the dilemma very well. I want to point out a number of things. In the first place, our intention with the submissions this afternoon is to support the bill in the context of its policy approach, to say we believe that traditional knowledge should be protected by way of amendment of the existing intellectual property statutes. So we are supporting the principle of the bill. At the same time, we are saying that we have become aware of certain drafting shortcomings in the bill, definition shortcomings, and the redrafted version is essentially the same thing as the bill, but presented in a rearranged format, in the sense that the provisions dealing with traditional knowledge have been put into separate chapters so that they are easily identifiable, not deviating from the provisions and the approach of the bill, but merely rearranging, so it's more of a technical matter. And at the same time, submissions made up to now have been taken into account in trying to improve the definitions. Definitions are all very much the same concepts which have been defined, but the definition, the wording, has been improved. So the material, very similar to the bill, just rendered into what the committee believes is a better presentation form.
I do see the department wanted to make a comment, but yes, Honourable September.
Please, so, Chair, I mean, the answer is useful, but the truth is they're advising the minister, and so we can't put them under due presence, the language thing this time of the day. We can't put you under due pressure. We should focus our attention here, Chair, I agree with you, that they are the ones that are accounting to us, and they should take us out of confusion.
This is why I asked you just to wait a minute, Mamela, as they say. Yes, DDG, Ms. Ntuli.
my view is that we've actually, a few presenters have given us draft legislation or proposed amendments to the legislation. The most significant, I think, was the first one, Dr. Dean, who actually had a whole other act, or bill rather, which he put forward. I think all of those need to be admissible as submissions to the committee. The fact that these presenters are advising the minister, it should have no bearing on that document they've presented. We are considering the amendment bill that was gazetted, and anything else must just be regarded as another third-party submission.
Yes, I do, on the one hand, agree with you, but as I say, it is the very nature of their function, which is as advisers to the minister. So my question had simply been, seen as they are advising the minister, is the minister aware of this? Because I think that puts a new spin on it, as it were. It's not substantively that this is not in order, but we are looking simply at process and procedure. And we've been made very conscious how important that aspect is, not only by people making submissions, but the Speaker's office itself has made it clear that procedure is as important as the legality, or not the legality per se, but the legal systems in place. Yes, Honourable September, before I just allow the DTI.
Yeah, I thought that maybe we shouldn't treat them unfairly. They have made submissions, and I thought that we were going to get an opportunity to ask questions to them like we did with everything else. And the committee must then at some point deliberate whatever, you know, we had to do. I think it's this thing of advising the minister that is getting this attention thing, and maybe we should just take it out of the equation and treat them as we have treated all the other 17, 20, however many people. And at some point, I mean, the department doesn't have to talk also now. At some point, we will have to say, what do we say about the bill? That would be my suggestion, Chair, that we probably should treat them in the same manner that we did with everyone else, because I certainly do have questions to them also.
I do hear from where you are coming, but I think that what is pertinent, and this is what we asked right at the beginning, in what capacity was the submission being made? Because Professor Duplessis is also operates in her personal capacity. And it won't be the first time that the sort of issue has come up where someone who operates professionally in their personal capacity makes submissions. However, when making submissions on behalf of the minister, if you like, or in having a relationship, as it were, professionally or in a statutory manner with the minister, then the principal is very much, has in fact the principal to whom you are advising, have they been informed? So that is why I asked in which capacity this was being done, because the submission itself has made it clear, and so has Professor Duplessis, that she does practice in her professional capacity in a number of these areas, and that is not unusual. It is not unusual in this regard. I think that was my question. I, at this stage, though, I certainly hesitate to pursue this line any further, because unless I can get a procedural position through the committee secretary, and I'm looking at the time, 5:10, as to whether anyone here is available, because we have been advised accordingly by the Speaker's office to ensure that we do follow procedures in this manner. And I wouldn't like to be faltered when I am already cautioned, if you want to put it that way, about a matter of process that operates within the Parliament. I was just not clear, though, on this other matter. So I would prefer to err on the side of caution, as already this piece of proposed legislation is proving to be a complex minefield, to say the very least. And I would not like to have been one of those who contributed to further complexities in the matter. So, regrettably, I want to ask the committee to respect my ruling. I may be wrong. And unless the committee secretary can go and get a procedural ruling for me, I would, you know, ask us to wait a while. If my watch is now saying very much just after 5:15, it's 5:15, he's able to do so in a few minutes, and he is going to return. So in a matter of 5:3, we can either proceed or, you know, abide by a particular ruling which I will give. And as I said, I think I've given my reasons for perhaps being obliged to make them, should it be necessary. So I would ask members not to leave Good Hope per se, but certainly if you want to stretch your legs for a bit. That we're not meeting on Friday. Some members were encouraging us to meet on Thursday afternoon, but as I already said, there was a position already taken with caucuses and one thing and another that that day should remain somewhat sacrosanct. So Friday, we thought it advisable to encourage you to do constituency or put your feet up with the family until next week. Right. So, that is, and I just hope that you will communicate, but that I'm not sure how you're going to if your phone is gone. Members, will you all just look on the right? Look under these desks and so on, because we can't lose that maroon. The thing is, it's not black, it's maroon. It's a BlackBerry. And the committee secretary was actually SMSing people just before lunch, never left here, but somehow the phone left. So I don't know. I would imagine it's a bit too distinctive to have been picked up, so perhaps it's just lying under something. Okay. So it's an earnest appeal, because you know how difficult it will be for us to then contact the secretary. Yes, that's one of the hazards. Well, look, what I should make clear to you is that what we have here is the standing committee, or the Standing Advisory Committee on Intellectual Property, with Professor Duplessis here as the Deputy Chairperson of SACP, and Mr. Alan Jefter, member of the SACP. Now, I understand that the Deputy Chairperson, Professor Duplessis, will be leading the delegation, or, you know, when I say that, we do have to refer to one person so that the other then engages as well. So what we'll do then is, I think you've listened to so many of these inputs and presentations, but yours again is of a slightly different nature. Am I correct? So my suggestion to you and proposal is, or rather request, would be just to explain who you are, as it were, you know, to members of the committee and anyone else who is present here. And where was that found? I wonder where it was found.
main thing is that it has been recovered, which is a lot more than can be said for certain intellectual property rights. Without even an expenditure of financial resources for that matter, but merely an application of our minds. So amazing what the application of the mind can achieve. But let us move on. I think we're all wide awake, ready to finish early. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much for this opportunity. Honourable members of this committee, they call this the graveyard session. And I think Honourable Chair, it is not because I think they will be dead by the end of the session. I think they will be wishing they were dead by the end of the session, because we are going to respond to each and every allegation having been made over the past 2 days, and we are going to quote authority for everything. My colleague, Alan Jefter, and I serve on the advisory committee to the Minister of Trade and Industry. And I'm reluctant to admit that this committee is established in terms of Section 40 of the Copyright Act. So we are under attack in any case, because we are under the Copyright Act. But on a serious note now, the committee has been very, very involved over the past 2, 3, 4 years, excuse me, with the draft legislation, and you'll see now what I'm referring to. Please permit me a preliminary remark. This committee has been grappling...
I'm so sorry to do this, but we want to hear you. Now, I don't know if your chair couldn't come a little closer. thank you.
Is this better? Can you hear me better now? Better. Okay. Thank you, Honourable Chair. This committee has been grappling with this complex bit of legislation for some time now. And both my colleague, Mr. Alan Yester, and I have been following the process very carefully. We've read the workshop reports. We are aware of all the problems that have been identified by the different stakeholders, the questions that have been asked, the criticism that has been expressed, the issues that have been raised. And at this stage, I'm not sure whether I should commiserate with this committee for the suffering that they had to endure, or whether I should congratulate them on their perseverance. But what I want to say, Honourable Chair, is that this will not have been a wasted effort. Whatever comes out of this legislative attempt will be a very important step in the legislative history of this country, because we are one of the first countries addressing from a legal perspective the need to protect traditional knowledge, or indigenous knowledge, as it can be called from time to time. And I just also want to acknowledge the members of the Department of Trade and Industry. They are all members of the advisory committee, ex officio, and we have all walked this road together. I just sincerely hope that the newspaper reports that appeared this morning, to the effect that this committee has already rejected the intellectual property bill on the table, is not quite correct. There was a newspaper report this morning seeming to indicate that there is already a sense of rejection of the intellectual property bill, but I think that is probably not correct. No. Now, I have been asked to identify myself, and I will do that. And then my colleague, Mr. Alan Yester, will identify himself, and you'll know exactly who you're dealing with. Honourable Chair, I have served on this advisory committee of the Minister of Trade and Industry since about 1986. I was first appointed by the then Deputy Minister, who was Mr. Siu Alat. It was the previous government. I was reappointed in 1995 by Minister Trevor Emmanuel, and reappointed at the end of 1999 by Minister Alec Irwin, and I'm still in office. Mr. Adam Lester has served for at least the last 10 years, but he'll tell you about that. So the point is that I have come a long way as part of the advisory committee dealing with the drafting and the assessment of intellectual property laws, regulations, systems. In 1997, I was part of the team that drafted the 1997 Comprehensive Intellectual Property Law Amendment Bill to ensure that the country's intellectual property laws were properly compliant with the TRIPS Agreement. And I think at this point in time, we can say with a measure of confidence that South Africa is seen as a country which is substantially TRIPS compliant. I have an apology from the chairman of our advisory committee, Judge Ian Farlam, who has just retired as a judge of the Supreme Court of Appeal. He is acting in Lesotho, and he couldn't attend the session today, but he is fully aware of the position that Alan and myself will be putting forward, and he supports that. Professionally, I joined the firm of Adams & Adams, which is a law firm specializing in intellectual property law. The firm was founded in 1908. We had our centenary in 2008. It is the biggest law firm specializing in intellectual property, with the exception probably of my colleague, who probably contests that. But I joined the firm in 1962 as a candidate attorney with a law degree and a science degree. Now, I think many people may have been in primary school then, or some may not even have been born. But ever since then, I have been involved in the area of intellectual property law. I have retired as a partner of the firm. We have an age-related retirement date, but fortunately they appointed me as a full-time consultant. They actually call me a senior consultant, and it's because of my grey hair. Not quite. A couple of years still to go, Honourable Chair, before you reach that stage. I served as the chairperson of the Patent Examination Board for many years. I was the president of the Law Society of the Northern Provinces. I was the first co-chair of the Law Society of South Africa. But that is all in the past. Now I'm just doing the work that really interests me, and that is dealing with intellectual property laws and the development of our laws. I also have an apology from the chairperson of our firm, Mr. Dario Tanziani, who fully supports, and the firm fully supports, the position that I will put to you and that Alan Yefta will also support. Now, personally, I have had extensive international exposure. I have lectured for WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization. I've lectured in China, in India, in Egypt, in many African countries to create an awareness and also to educate people about the intricacies of intellectual property legislation. I deal very regularly with the World Trade Organization. In fact, when South Africa first signed the Bundle of Agreements in 1994, I appeared on behalf of the Department of Trade and Industry before the TRIPS Council in Geneva to justify the intellectual property laws of our country and to answer the questions put to us by many other countries on allegations that we were not entirely TRIPS compliant. I think at the end of the day, our legislative system persuaded people that we were in fact in compliance with TRIPS. I still have regular contact with the World Trade Organization. We provide information through a committee that I serve on developments in relation to intellectual property, and the TRIPS Secretariat takes note of that, and it is usually integrated into the work that they've done. In fact, I met with the two representatives of the TRIPS Secretariat about 2 weeks ago in Paris.
I want to say, before I give the microphone to my colleague, Mr. Alan Yefta, that yes, the 50-year period, which is referred to in the Copyright Act as the cut-off point for the protection to be extended to traditional works, will be reconsidered. It is an arbitrary cut-off date. It can be reconsidered, and it will be reconsidered. The team from the Department of Trade and Industry will sit around a table, and we will come up with a proposal on how that particular issue, which came up in about every presentation made to this committee, was raised. And I know Mr. Honourable Mr. Harris is very aware of that, and I want to say before I do anything else, that will be looked at very carefully. I hand over now to my colleague, Mr. Alan Yefta.
Thank you. I've been an intellectual property law practitioner since 1982. In 1995, I was appointed by Minister Alec Irwin as a member of the SACIP. And in the same manner like my colleague, since my appointment in 1995, I've been reappointed by Minister Alec Irwin, and I've served an ongoing stint until the present date. In terms of the functioning of the SACIP, we work very closely with CIPRO and the DTI officials engaged in IP. I'm presently a director of the law firm Tlaleko Hofmeyr Incorporated, also focusing on IP. I've also, over the past few years, worked extensively on the innovation and commercialization of IP, and which seeks really to develop and help, especially entrepreneurs and SMMEs in the commercialization of the IP. Within the SACIP, we also have subcommittees. I have served on the subcommittee as chairman of the Copyright and Trademark Subcommittees, and I also have worked on the Innovation Subcommittee. In like manner as my colleague, I was involved in the drafting of the ensuring that the intellectual property was complied with TRIPS. There were also certain other legislation that we had worked on, amongst others, the Counterfeit Goods Act. Just in terms of experience, this formed part of my practice, and I've built up whether through advising local companies and offshore companies. I have worked for quite a while, since 1982, in this area. More recently, I've started conducting research within the area of natural resources, and specifically focusing on, amongst others, IKS and TKS within the sphere of the National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act, where there are provisions that provide for access sharing and for access and benefit sharing. I think just to summarize, we on the SACIP, a number of us have worked for very, very many years in that unit. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, so it's very difficult to say whether we are experts. I'm hesitant to say that, but I think I can say that both my colleague and I have experience in this field, and we are happy to share our experience with this Honourable Committee. The Committee will be aware that a bundle of documents has been submitted by the Standing Advisory Committee and also jointly by the firms that we practice for and on my own personal behalf. It's the 6 stack of paper. There are copies at the back there. It was submitted electronically in May 2010. You've got that. And the most important document within that bundle is in fact what is referred to as the revised IP laws amendment draft. There is a draft. It is towards the back of the bundle, but it is a fully revised version of a bill to put the bill which has been published in the Government Gazette and which is the subject of all the criticism that we heard over time, to put a proposal forward on how that bill can be rearranged, restructured, to take care of all of the problems that have been pointed out. So I think with the permission of the team from the DTI, I would request the members of this committee to look at that document. It is part of the bundle. It is entitled, I must find it. Unfortunately, they are not consecutively numbered, but it is entitled Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Bill. And then there's a blank page, but it is formatted in exactly the right format for a bill to be submitted to Parliament. And please, committee members, take into account the redrafted version which has served before the advisory committee and in which many of the problems have been addressed. This bill, in fact, then shows that the Department of Trade and Industry has taken note of all of the submissions made since the first publication of the draft bill in 2006 or 7, and that the advisory committee has looked at all of the submissions and that steps have been taken to integrate all the proposals with merit and all the points of criticism into the revised version. So it is not quite correct, as some of our previous presenters have said, that the Department of Trade and Industry did nothing to take into account what was put before them. It was, in fact, taken into account. I also want to say that, of course, this is still a draft document, Honourable Chair, and whatever suggestions, proposals, recommendations will come out of this committee will have to be worked into that document. But at least there is a starting point that one can use to integrate the proposals that come from this committee. And also please remember that in order to implement the legislative changes, there will have to be regulations. The regulations can only be addressed once the format and the wording and the content of the bill itself have been settled and finalized. Then the team will get to work again and start drafting regulations. Now, my submission, and that of my colleague, Mr. Alan Yefter, will be totally opposite to what has been presented here over the past 2 days. We are, in fact, in support of the policy position that traditional knowledge should be integrated in order to obtain effective protection into the existing intellectual property framework. We support the principle, as endorsed by Cabinet, that amendment of the existing intellectual property statutes is the correct way to go in order to ensure that effective protection is given to something which is regarded not only as of spiritual and emotional value to this country, but something which has inherent economic value. Traditional knowledge is intellectual property, and as intellectual property, it has economic value. It can be commercialized. It can be exploited to the benefit of those who have an interest in that particular item of traditional knowledge. The bill as published has shortcomings. I mean, we've heard that, we know that, we're aware of that. But we believe the shortcomings can be addressed, and we believe that there are some reasons for using the intellectual property system to provide protection for traditional knowledge rather than creating a sui generis piece of legislation. And I will come back to this because it was an issue that was raised over and over again. Give us a sui generis piece of legislation. A sui generis piece of legislation, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of this committee, will mean that traditional knowledge is placed outside the framework of commercializable intellectual property. It means that we will, in a way, marginalize traditional knowledge. We will take it out of the existing international framework that is there to deal with issues pertaining to intellectual property. We believe, as a committee, and I as a person, that we should rather draw traditional knowledge into the framework which exists nationally as well as internationally to give recognition to the creations of the human mind. Because that is what intellectual property is. It is the outcome of the creative activity of the human mind. I cannot see how anybody can say that traditional knowledge is not the outcome of the creative activity of the human mind. And if that is the encompassing description of intellectual property, then I say it applies to traditional knowledge too. I agree, and I'm going to give the mic to you soon. I agree, Honourable Chair, that it will probably be necessary to set up this task team of experts, specialists, to look at the final draft of the bill. And I have no problem with that concept. But my call on the Honourable Committee is to give serious consideration to the proposal before the committee that intellectual property protection should be given to traditional knowledge, to the different manifestations of traditional knowledge. Not all can be covered, but this is the first step in a certain direction. Over to my colleague.
Thank you. I just want to add to the last point, and that is in terms of the National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act, it makes provision for indigenous knowledge and for protection thereof, in the sense that there's protection in terms of the Patents Act, where any use of indigenous knowledge in a patent must be disclosed. In terms of the Biodiversity Act, there's provision whereby if any indigenous knowledge is used, then there must be access given and there must be benefit sharing with the community. So to that extent, we already have within the Biodiversity Act, there's protection for IKS. And that is supported in turn by the Patents Act insofar as any patents are filed for that knowledge. Now, there's a philosophical issue, and that is really relates to one of developed countries up against developing countries. And if you look at natural resources, a lot of those issues are being tabled today in terms of climate change. Our intellectual property laws development from where it came initially would have developed out of the developed countries. Whereas what we have at the moment is where we sit in South Africa, where we are a developing country, we have indigenous knowledge systems that we need to protect. And if you look within the whole framework within countries such as China, in South America, their use of indigenous knowledge, whether for pharmaceuticals or for traditional health, is very, very extensive. And the other country or continent also where IKS is very extensively used is within Africa. Now, to the extent that we are a developing country, what we're saying is that we need to recognize that there is a lot of exploitation in the sense where you have developed countries looking at indigenous knowledge systems and looking to tap into that in order to exploit our biodiversity, and specifically the knowledge within that. Now, by ensuring that we bring IKS within intellectual property, we then, as a developing country, do what we should do in terms of Africa, and that is to give recognition to the fact that it is intellectual property and that we should protect it within the existing system that we've created. Now, and I think it's for that reason that we are saying that if we look at how we have our constitution, we've got environmental management acts, a whole raft of legislation to protect natural resources. If you take indigenous knowledge systems it derives from the resources that we have within the country, whether it be our plants, whether it be in terms of other resources that we have. And what we're really saying is that by bringing IKS within the ambit of our intellectual property legislation, we will then be able to provide for our people as a developed country. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, I want to endorse very strongly what Alan Yefter has said. You know, when the country in South Africa enacted the 2005 Patents Amendment Act, which is the one that my colleague referred to, and he and I were on the committee when that happened, there was an outcry because people said, what, you want to introduce a disclosure agreement into the Patents Act? Nobody has done that before. The Act was passed, the regulations were drafted, it was put into effect, and you know, the world didn't end. As a matter of fact, now, when the disclosure agreement in terms of the Convention on Biodiversity is discussed, South Africa is mentioned as the example country which had the courage to introduce the disclosure agreement when the other countries were still debating whether it should go into patent legislation. And yes, the Biodiversity Management Act in South Africa is working. There are difficulties with the bioprospecting regulations and the rules, but they will be sorted out as time goes on. I want to say something else, and that is the argument has been put to this committee that one should not distort or try and extend existing intellectual property laws to cover something which doesn't fit into the legal system. The reference was made to trying to fit a square peg into a round hole and so forth. But if you look back, Madam Chair, at the history of our intellectual property laws, as things developed, the laws were changed. Initially, the Copyright Act only covered songs, tunes, literary works, the words, stories, and artistic works, two or three-dimensional works. Then, suddenly, it was possible to make a sound recording. The Copyright Act was amended to make provision for sound recordings. Then it was possible to make a broadcast. The Copyright Act was amended to provide for broadcasts as copyright works. Then computer programs came along. The Copyright Act was amended to provide for the protection of computer programs as copyright works. Even program-carrying signals to satellites are copyright works. Why cannot traditional songs, traditional folklore, traditional art, three-dimensional creative art as well as two-dimensional art, why cannot that also be slotted into the copyright system? There is no reason I submit to this committee. The same happened with all of the other intellectual property laws. The Patents Act was extended to provide for microorganisms. A microorganism is a thing which is now patentable. Business methods are becoming patentable inventions. But at the moment, the bill will not deal with the Patents Act. That is something that will have to be addressed very specifically as a next step. But if you look at the Designs Act, the Designs Act was similarly extended to provide for things which did not exist when the original Designs Act was formulated, such as integrated circuits. The little items that go into all the electronic equipment that we use, we now predict an integrated circuit as a design. Again, why cannot the Designs Act be amended with appropriate definitions to provide for traditional designs? All the beadwork that we have everywhere in the world as originating from South Africa, why cannot that be protected as well as other creative works? So the submission is, I do not believe we need sui generis legislation. I believe we need to look carefully at the bill, the redrafted version, preferably, and make sure that the way in which the existing intellectual property statutes are amended will cater for what is required, and that is to give adequate protection to traditional knowledge and specific manifestations of traditional knowledge. Certain aspects of traditional knowledge cannot go in intellectual property statutes. You know, burial sites, items of spiritual significance. That is something which will have to be protected in another way. But I also want to make it very clear that intellectual property laws will never try to replace customary laws and will never try to replace common law. Intellectual property legislation is in addition to existing systems of customary laws, which can be relied upon to provide for ancillary protective measures for traditional items of culture, and especially those with spiritual value. Intellectual property laws exist in parallel with the common law system, as we heard from one of the previous speakers, and it also exists in parallel with existing systems of customary law and traditional law. Alan, you must give a sign if you want to intervene. The reason why the advisory committee believes that intellectual property is the proper mechanism to use is that there is the benefit of an existing regulatory legislative system, not only in South Africa, where we have a system of regulation and legislation, a system of administration, a system of registration, a system of enforcement of intellectual property rights, but also internationally, where there are instruments dealing with intellectual property. As yet, there is no international instrument, apart from the Convention on Biodiversity and the Bonn guidelines, which were issued in terms of that convention. There is no instrument dealing with traditional knowledge. The countries are still fighting. They are still fighting on how to formulate an instrument which will give international certainty to the protection of traditional knowledge. I think perhaps I'm an optimist or an idealist, but I think that what will come out of this legislative effort of South Africa may just provide the template, the framework, to other countries to come up with something to deal specifically with traditional knowledge. Because I can assure you, Honourable Chair, that at each and every international conference there is a debate about traditional knowledge and the need to protect, and the question, how do we go about to protect this? Alan?
The point I wanted to make is in respect of in terms of administration. We have the New Companies Act, and under the New Companies Act, the CIPRO and UKIP will be merged into the company structure. Under the existing CIPRO system, for example, provision is made for the registration of copyright in forms. You also have other legislation such as the Performance Protection Act. So in terms of doing the administration of the visual knowledge systems, our position is that when the New Companies Act comes into place and when the new structures are put into place, provision should be made for the administration systems that would go hand in hand with the recorder of the visual knowledge systems as and when they develop. So it is not an extra cost, certainly within the existing system. They are dealing with certain elements of copyright and intellectual property. And our position is certainly that when we bring traditional knowledge within the ambit of intellectual property legislation, the same administration system can then also apply.
Thank you, Alan. Absolutely correct. I want to please refer to something which has come up especially from the Council of Traditional Leaders, and that had to do with the participation in decision-making. Now, the national framework that will be created to administer the intellectual property rights in regard to traditional knowledge, that is set out from page 22 of this redrafted bill version that I referred to in your big bundle of documents. If you look at page 22 of the redraft, there is provision specifically for the establishment of a national council. Now, this national council has been expanded, and there is very clear provision for the appointment of members in consultation with the ministers responsible for agriculture, for arts and culture, for cooperative governments and traditional affairs, environmental affairs, health and science and technology. Then there is specific provision for representation by organized local government, and then there is provision for the association of traditional healers. That should be expanded by adding and the council of traditional leaders, not only the traditional healers, but also the traditional leaders. Then the minister may consult with academia, the organized legal profession, organized commerce and industry, and any other minister or relevant body or institution. So the council has been rephrased in a very encompassing manner. And there is specific provision that the council shall be broadly representative of the different cultures of the Republic. And further specific provisions, which I can read out, at all times will have as members at least three persons with extensive knowledge in and patronage of indigenous cultures and values of indigenous communities, at least three persons with extensive knowledge in and patronage of traditional artistic, literary, musical, and performing arts, and, fortunately for Alan and me, at least two persons with extensive knowledge and expertise in intellectual property. So the intellectual property lawyers will also be there. Then please look for further on in that same redrafted version, apart from the duties of the council, there is reference to the national database. Please allow me, Honourable Chair, to say something.
It's on page 25, the national database.
Sorry, national database, page 25. The usefulness and function of and the justification of a database were raised frequently as issues around this intellectual property bill. I think what we need to take into account is that we must also, as a country, as a body of persons involved in developing the laws of our country, ensure that traditional and indigenous knowledge will be recorded so that it will be recognized, that it will be preserved, and so that the unauthorized use by third parties will be able to be prevented. Now, a database is one way of creating a record of what we have by way of the wealth of traditional knowledge. As the previous speaker also stressed the importance of a database, but from an intellectual property perspective, I want to point out another very important function of a database. A database provides a record of knowledge which can be relied upon to prevent unauthorized persons of taking the traditional knowledge, rendering that into a commercial and commercially exploitable commodity, and taking all the benefit, such as the neem tree, such as basmati rice, such as the hoodia plant. Once you have a database, your traditional knowledge becomes prior art, and nobody can hope to patent that same knowledge at a later time, because you have a base on which you can rely to show that that knowledge existed prior to that fraudulent patent application. That would have assisted the Mashakani group in their struggle with the pelargonium plot and the exploitation in Germany. That would also have assisted us, I think, in the battle about the rooibos T mark. Alan, do you have something to add?
I think the other example is the rosy periwinkle in Madagascar that they found was a very good, it had anti-cancer fighting properties. And as a plant, the product, the plant has been to a large extent over-exploited in Madagascar, and many of the pharmaceutical companies have harvested and made very substantial income out of this. You know, so I think the point is we have our, these are resources of the country, and we must protect them and increase them in terms of their perception as intellectual property.
That. I also want to move on to page 26 of the redrafted version, where there is now specific provision for the establishment of a national trust in addition to a national trust fund. So there will no longer be only a fund, there will also be a trust, and there is provision for how the trustees will be appointed and what the duties of the trustees will be. And Honourable Chair, I want to emphasise at this point that the redrafted version took into account the proposals that came from the NEDLAC consultation process. Now, I know that the consultation process through NEDLAC has been criticised by some, but all of the proposals that came from that consultation process have been worked into the redrafted version. So there is more a definite provision for how money paid into the National Trust will be dealt with. There is specific provision for alternative dispute resolution mechanisms and for the appointment of a dispute resolution panel. That's on page 28 of the redrafted version. And then there are very specific provisions for the setting up of community-based bodies. That is to ensure that the indigenous communities will have an opportunity of becoming engaged in the, not only in the administration of the rights and in the furtherance of their rights, but also in the economic exploitation of the rights. The new Section 64 and Section 65 deal with community-based bodies and also with community-based trusts and trust funds. And those proposals based on what came out of NEDLAC. Madam Chair, so the database, although some people may find it an unnecessary feature of the system, I believe will have a very important practical function once it is established. I also just want to go on again to repeat that the Legal Resources Centre stressed the importance of customary law. The Intellectual Property Amendment Bill says nowhere, and it is not intended to replace or remove or disable or diminish at all the customary laws which are in existence. They will continue to function as they are. You know, Honourable Chair, that if one looks at the system of intellectual property protection, although the Patents Act is there, an inventor is not obliged to use the Patents Act to patent his product. He can decide to rely on some other form of protection, whether it is trade secret, as in the case of the Coca-Cola formula, or whether it is a passing off or unfair competition. The patent system is there to be used at the option of the owner, and that will always be an applicable principle. A trademark owner can also choose not to register his trademark. He can rely on unregistered trade names, passing off, unfair competition, but the trademark system is there to be used if and when desired. And that will be exactly the same in the case of traditional knowledge. It is not a compulsory system. There may be situations where another system of protection will be more adequate, such as customary law. But at least the opportunity will be there for traditional knowledge to be recognized and protected, and that means enforced against unauthorized use by others through an existing legal system.
Specifically in respect of trademarks, typically you would go and do a search to determine whether the trademark is registered at the registry in South Africa. You would then also check the company's name to see whether there's a possible company that has a similar name in a similar business as the goods on which you want to use your trademark. And then sometimes also one would go and do a check to see whether there's a domain name registered. Now, if you have a database and if you then develop your IPR from there, it means that when you go and do your searches, you would also be able to cross-check against the database. And as that database is developed, it means that you would be able to verify to what extent your trademark is being used or is forms part of a TKS system. So the systems are in place. Certainly, if we develop the database, it would be another level against which you can check your trademark. And certainly, it would provide protection.
A very good point. Absolutely correct. That is exactly how the database will become functional. Honourable Chair, several of the previous speakers pointed out inadequacies in the definitions. Yes, I concede that the definitions will have to be looked at again. Already they have been redefined. In the redrafted version, I think the definitions are tighter, they are more clear, they are more certain. But even after having prepared the redrafted version, the advisory committee at its very recent meeting, I think it was in July, decided that it wants to rephrase indigenous community. And in the subsequent submission, it's called supplementary memorandum, which was submitted in July 2010, the advisory committee, in fact, proposes a further definition of indigenous community. It's on page 3 of the supplementary memorandum. So the point is, yes, there are inadequacies in the definitions, and yes, they will be looked at very, very carefully in the light of all of the comments that had been made. Certainly, the periods of protection will be looked at again, and the 50-year cut-off date will be reconsidered in its entirety. But I want to explain what the underlying rationalization is always in regard to intellectual property. It is this, that the IP system is a quid pro quo system. The creator of the innovative concept discloses it in a document somewhere, in an application or in a database, in return gets exclusive rights for a given period of time to prevent all others from using that particular creative concept so that the creator can get all the economic benefit that flows from that creative product. But after a given period of time, the principle is that the creative product falls within the public domain and then it becomes available to all who may wish to make use of that. And that principle, I believe, should be adhered to also in regard to the protection that will be provided for traditional works. That is something, perhaps, that this Honourable Committee should debate amongst themselves and perhaps give an indication of how they see that as a possibility. But I cannot visualize that anybody can have exclusive rights in regard to anything forever and ever and ever. At some stage, the community must get the benefit of that creative input. And I think that's a very good principle. But perhaps that's something that the committee members can consider. Alan?
Under the different statutes, different periods would apply. I mean, if it was, for example, a trademark, TKS, for example, that trademark would continue because you would renew it on every 10 years. state marks run for 10 years and then you can renew for forever as long as you continue using the mark and you renew the trademark. With patents, of course, that would give you a monopoly for 20 years, and copyrights and the designs would also be a limited period. But in respect of trademarks, that would be able to be continued. So to the extent that you've got particular geographic marks, for example, or rainbows, those marks you would be able to renew on an ongoing basis.
Honourable Chair, two matters were raised by the committee, by members of the committee. The one had to do with the World Trade Organization and TRIPS. And I believe I want to confirm that TRIPS merely sets out minimum levels of protection. I think it was the Honourable September, Ms. September, who raised that. Absolutely correct. Only minimum levels of protection. A country is perfectly entitled, without contravening the TRIPS agreement, to give more extensive protection. But a country cannot give less protection than what is required in TRIPS. So I cannot see that there will be a contravention of TRIPS if traditional knowledge manifestations are included into our intellectual property laws. We may have one problem, though, and that is the national treatment principle, which has been referred to by several speakers, and that is that a country is obliged, in terms of the TRIPS Agreement, Article 3, and also the Berne Convention, and also the Paris Convention, to give the same treatment that it gives to its own nationals to the nationals of other countries, other member countries of a convention or the TRIPS Agreement. Now, Honourable Chair, you will see that one of the documents which was in fact submitted by the advisory committee is a proposed section to be incorporated into the revised bill. It is based on Section 37 of the Copyright Act, and that is that the minister will have the express authority to extend the protection introduced by way of this amendment to other countries, but there will always be a requirement of reciprocal protection. And I can't find it now amongst my documents. Let me try my own big file. I'm going to give you a page. Honourable Chair, the problem was it was a separate submission. It is item 4 of the content pages. It is a single, no, it's a two-page document only. It's a separate document. It came with a bundle of documents. It was lodged in May this year as item 4 of the bundle of documents. And if you don't have it, you can have this one, which is in my file, because I have copies. It is a proposed provision to be inserted into the bill, that is its title, to give effect to the national treatment principle, and it says application of act to countries to which it does not extend. And there is specific authority to the minister by way of notice in the Gazette. And incidentally, that's exactly the way in which copyright protection is extended to other countries in terms of the Berne Convention, to extend the protection to any country specified in the notice. So, Madam Chair, that is the one thing where there was concern within the advisory committee, the national treatment principle, but we believe that this provision, if incorporated, will take care of that concern. Alan, do you have anything to say? Okay. I would also just like to refer to a question that was asked by one of the honourable members, and that was more or less as follows. If one had to compare the proposed protection to traditional knowledge by way of the intellectual property system with protection by way of a sui generis system, where would the best bargain be found? Where could we look for the best dispensation to this country by choosing one of these two routes? My own view is that to use the sui generis route will be to isolate traditional knowledge from existing systems, to create a piece of legislation about which there would be no existing way of approaching the protection, of enforcing the protection, of assessing the protection, and there would be no international instruments to fall back on. I think although such an act may be able to address traditional knowledge in an easier manner, one of the presenters this morning said that communities do not want to look at four or five different statutes. They want one statute. It may resolve that. It may provide one piece of legislation, but it will fall very short on the other benefits that I believe will be achieved through using the intellectual property system, and that is having an international system of conventions, of arrangements, of negotiations, where the benefit of best practice, international best practice, can be gained. Sui generis legislation will sit on the sideline. And I believe for that reason, it would not be the best bargain that we can provide for the protection of traditional knowledge.
As a matter of practice, what happens is when you meet with a community or with someone who needs advice on IP, then what you would normally do is you would identify what is the makeup of the IP, and you would then determine whether it fits under trademark or whether it fits under design or whether it fits under copyright. Now, what we're doing over here is we're amending specific IP legislation, and when in due course you are consulted by a community, you would then inquire as to what is the nature of the IP in that TKS system, and if it is a trademark issue, then you would deal with it on the basis of the Trademarks Act. And you would do the same if it was, for example, in respect of copyright. So clearly, as we said earlier, you have the example in terms of patents. You also have the Biodiversity Act, whereas on the ground at the moment, people are concluding a benefit-sharing agreement, and they're doing it on the basis where they identify exactly what is the nature. So if it is, in the end, that the TKS, for example, is a plant aspect that they can patent, that is what they do. So ultimately, what is happening at the moment in terms of the Biodiversity Act is that where they deal with TKS and the Act deals with bioprospecting, they then apply traditional IP law. If it is a patent issue, then they go and protect it. And this is what we are saying at the committee is fit the TKS within the existing IP system, and you make the inquiry when you are consulted as to where, under what legislation it fits.
Honourable Chair, I think we are probably overloading this committee, but remember we have been working on this issue for the past 4, 5, 6 years, McDonald going back, I can't tell you how long. So we've been grappling with the issues. And we've had endless discussions, and the team will know exactly to what extent. So perhaps we are giving you so much that you would prefer us to stop. But I want to say a few more things. This morning, the issue of geographical indications was mentioned. And there was a very strong plea for better protection for GIs, for geographical indicators. Now, the A trademark amendment bill, the bill that you have in front of you, takes the first little step to make it quite clear that geographical indications can be registered as trademarks under the heading of collective trademarks and the heading of certification trademarks. It is only the first step. And the two presenters made it very clear that a stronger, more encompassing system was required. We are very well aware of that. But we are also very well aware that at this moment in time, there is negotiation going on at the World Trade Organization. The DTI team is there right now, or they will be there in a week or two, because I have been consulted on certain issues relating to the protection of geographical indications. And it would be unwise for this country at this point in time to come up with a more comprehensive system of geographical indication registration. At the moment, the TRIPS agreement only has Article 22 requiring us to give recognition to geographical indications, and this is what the amendment now will achieve. And once the negotiations in terms of Article 23 and 24, that is either the multi-party registration system, the multilateral registration system, and the expansion of geographical indications from wine and spirits to other products. Once those negotiations have been concluded, we will be in a better position in this country to set up the more comprehensive protection system for GIs, and we have to do that. We have to. We are losing things which we have grown up with, things such as Biltong. I was surprised to see that Biltong was a registered trademark in Germany. What do they know about Biltong? But be that as it may, we need to come up with a more comprehensive protection system, and it will happen as soon as the negotiations have been concluded on the international level.
Yes. Thank you to both of you, and that would be, I'm just looking, I know you kept on referring to the person concerned as Alan, but I think it's Jester, isn't it? Jester. Professor Duplessis and Mr. Alan Jester, yes, am I correct? Thank you. Just before the committee asks their question, I just want to get a clarification. Obviously, the bill we have before us was the one which was gazetted in 2008. Just want to be quite certain about that. And you are, of course, the Standing Advisory Committee on Intellectual Property to the Minister. I hope I'm correct there. So the question then is this. I've seen the draft bill now, which you are proposing, having heard a number of issues, of course, not having heard the public hearings here and some of the issues that have come up. But I would assume, if I look at what you have before us, and we did get this probably a week or so ago, 10 days ago, this has been shared with the Minister as his advisory committee. You see, I'm looking here, you are the advisory committee of the Minister, not of Parliament. So I'm just want to clarify that.
Chair, yes, the advisory committee keeps full minutes of all of its meetings, and the minutes would have all the supporting documentation as part of the minutes. And the minister has been very, very busy over the past couple of months. You'll see that this bill was submitted to you in May 2010. At the same time, through the Department of Trade and Industry, the New Companies Act was being dealt with, the consumer protection legislation was being dealt with. I think the intellectual property is probably the one that will come up now once the other two have been concluded.
So you know why I seek that clarification? Notwithstanding, of course, how busy the minister is, I think we're all aware of that, all of us, is that protocol-wise and systems-wise and so on, one would have expected the minister, who as your advisory committee there, to have had sight of it in some way, so that I suppose he could, if he is that busy travelling, could have referred this to another member of the department, the DG, DDG, to give him a comment. So I say this purely to do with the protocols involved, not because the substance of what you're saying is what we may have an issue with at all. But again, you know, we've been reminded so much of process, procedure, and that kind of thing. So
because having done this, you see, any fresh bill that would be contemplated by the department, as it were, would have to go through a particular process, if I may put it that way. Now, the bill that we've been talking about, 2007, is here before Parliament, you see. It's right here. Now, I just want to clarify, even with my own, the committee secretary, but also possibly Honourable September, who had been a chair in the previous term, I do think that the minister probably is at liberty to withdraw a bill, if I understand that correctly. But I may be wrong, that's why I'm just looking at both of you. I certainly know that on the parliamentary side and the committee, one of Parliament's committees, we have the right to recommend, if you want to put it that way, that this bill is withdrawn, if I can put it that way. Now, I'm just, if you don't mind, I'm just clarifying this with the committee secretary, because I think it's an important point. September, yeah, but if you could just come up to the table. September.
Chair, not maybe directly to your question, but partly too. I was going to ask a question in this regard. I think it would be helpful if they could clarify to us, notwithstanding in which capacity you're giving it, but the intention of your submission. Because everything that has been submitted to us, whoever it is, the committee must consider what do we do with the submissions that people are making. And so I think that must be clarified. As we sit here now, I would understand that you are making a submission and the committee must consider it, and we must then say what do we do with the bill. But in the clarity that you provide, you also, because I hear you saying, you know, you're still busy. We're not sure if you're at your end tail already. But the key point, Chair, for us is the bill is in Parliament. And the committee must decide whatever we want to do. It's in our domain. It's our call at the moment, notwithstanding whatever. It's our call at the moment, and we need to take an appropriate decision on what we need to do. So I think so the issue of withdrawing or not withdrawing is not, it can't be in the equation. We must look at the totality of the fact that we've had a two-day public hearings, and I mean, for example, the subcommittee probably should sit and mull over all of these things, and you know, sort of that direction. They have to clarify to us the intention of the content of what they have brought here to us, because you can't have a bill in Parliament and something else is carrying on there, and then what?
Thank you very much. I think, yes, let's just settle this procedural issue at the moment and systems. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, I understand the dilemma very well. I want to point out a number of things. In the first place, our intention with the submissions this afternoon is to support the bill in the context of its policy approach, to say we believe that traditional knowledge should be protected by way of amendment of the existing intellectual property statutes. So we are supporting the principle of the bill. At the same time, we are saying that we have become aware of certain drafting shortcomings in the bill, definition shortcomings, and the redrafted version is essentially the same thing as the bill, but presented in a rearranged format, in the sense that the provisions dealing with traditional knowledge have been put into separate chapters so that they are easily identifiable, not deviating from the provisions and the approach of the bill, but merely rearranging, so it's more of a technical matter. And at the same time, submissions made up to now have been taken into account in trying to improve the definitions. Definitions are all very much the same concepts which have been defined, but the definition, the wording, has been improved. So the material, very similar to the bill, just rendered into what the committee believes is a better presentation form.
I do see the department wanted to make a comment, but yes, Honourable September.
Precisely so, Chair. I mean, the answer is a useful, but the truth is they're advising the minister. And so we can't put them under due presence. Sorry, the language thing this time of the day. We can't put you under due pressure. We should focus our attention here, Chair. I agree with you. They are the ones that are accounting to us, and they should take us out of confusion.
This is why I asked you just to wait a minute, Mamela, as they say. Yes, DDG, Ms. Ntuli.
My view is that we've actually, a few presenters have given us draft legislation or proposed amendments to the legislation. The most significant, I think, was the first one, Dr. Dean, who actually had a whole other act, or bill rather, which he put forward. I think all of those need to be admissible as submissions to the committee. The fact that these presenters are advising the minister, it should have no bearing on that document they've presented. We are considering the amendment bill that was gazetted, and anything else must just be regarded as another third-party submission.
Yes, I do on the one hand agree with you, but as I say, it is the very nature of their function, which is as advisers to the minister. So my question had simply been, seen as they are advising the minister, is the minister aware of this? Because I think that puts a new spin on it, as it were. It's not substantively that this is not in order, but we are looking simply at process and procedure. And we've been made very conscious how important that aspect is, not only by people making submissions, but the Speaker's office itself has made it clear that procedure is as important as the legality, or not the legality per se, but the legal systems in place. Yes, Honourable September, before I just allow the DTI.
Yeah, I thought that maybe we shouldn't treat them unfairly. They have made submissions, and I thought that we were going to get an opportunity to ask questions to them like we did with everything else. And the committee must then at some point deliberate whatever, you know, we have to do. I think it's this thing of advising the minister that is getting the attention thing, and maybe we should just take it out of the equation and treat them as we have treated all the other 17, 20, however many people. And at some point, I mean, the department doesn't have to talk also now. At some point, we will have to say, what do we say about the bill? That would be my suggestion, Chair, that we probably should treat them in a fair manner that we did with everyone else, because I certainly do have questions to them also.
I do hear from where you are coming, but I think that what is pertinent, and this is what we asked right at the beginning, in what capacity was the submission being made, because Professor Duplessis is also operates in her personal capacity. And it won't be the first time that this sort of issue has come up. with someone who operates professionally in their personal capacity make submissions. However, when making submissions on behalf of the minister, if you like, or in having a relationship, as it were, professionally or in a statutory manner with the minister, then the principal is very much, has in fact the principal to whom you are advising, have they been informed? So that is why I asked in which capacity this was being done, because the submission itself has made it clear, and so has Professor Du Plessis, that she does practice in her professional capacity in a number of these areas, and that is not unusual. Is not unusual in this regard. I think that was my question. At this stage, though, I certainly hesitate to pursue this line any further, because unless I can get a procedural position through the committee secretary, and I'm looking at the time, 5:10, as to whether anyone here is available, because we have been advised accordingly by the Speaker's office to ensure that we do follow procedures in this manner. And I wouldn't like to be faulted when I am already cautioned, if you want to put it that way, about a matter of process that operates within the Parliament. I was just not clear, though, on this other matter. So I would prefer to err on the side of caution, as already this piece of proposed legislation is proving to be a complex minefield, to say the very least. And I would not like to have been one of those who contributed to further complexities in the matter. So, regrettably, I want to ask the committee to respect my ruling. I may be wrong. And unless the committee secretary can go and get a procedural ruling for me, I would, you know, ask us to wait a while. My watch is now saying very much just after 5:15, it's 5:15, he's able to do so in a few minutes, and he is going to return. So in a matter of 5:3, we can either proceed or, abide by a particular ruling which I will give. And as I said, I think I've given my reasons for perhaps being obliged to make them. Should it be necessary. So I would ask members not to leave Good Hope per se, but certainly if you want to stretch your legs for a bit.